here on this Wednesday, December 26th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me. We'll have at least one guest here on today's show. The first guest, Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. Going to chat some college football and some Week 17 NFL with him. Got a line out to Wes Reynolds. Hopefully he'll join us here on today's show. If he doesn't, I'm sure I can find something I can talk about here for the last 20, 25 minutes or something on today's program. But over at bangthebook.com, lots of great stuff going on. Obviously, with the holiday week, not as much content as usual. The NBA off on Monday. NHL gets back into action tomorrow. So you want to make sure that you're checking out Parker Michaels' NHL picks once we get back from the break. Excuse me. And, of course, we've got all the bowl game previews, NFL Week 17 content coming your way. Lots of good stuff going on over there. A big UFC event this weekend. I'll have some self-evaluation things going on about the new year. I had a betting resolutions piece last year, so I'll revisit that. Maybe throw up my Baseball Hall of Fame ballot. I don't know. We'll do a bunch of cool stuff here to wrap up this year over at bangthebook.com. And, of course, do some good stuff here on Bang the Book Radio as well. Brad Powers will join us tomorrow on Friday, our Westgate Super Contest selection segment. Brent from DSI Sportsbook. So be a good week the rest of the way here on Bang the Book Radio. Make sure that you're tuned in for that. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. You sign up at DSI using that promo code BTB and the number 200. 100% deposit match bonus up to $500 for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino up to $500 as well. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. We'll start things off here on today's program with professional handicapper Brian Leonard from wagertalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
It's going very well. The wife's back in Cleveland visiting the family. Gives me a lot more time to catch up on some of the things I wanted to do and get a head start on next year's football. So it's I'm very happy. The more time I get to study the numbers and get prepared for the upcoming seasons is a big benefit to me and my clients.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second then, since you brought that up, because, you know, one of the things that we talked about with the creation of Power Ratings earlier on, well before the season even started, is that you want to make sure that you've got a good base of year-end Power Ratings to start from for the upcoming season, and especially because, I mean, look, let's be honest, we're 5 months away from the South Point putting up season win totals and game of the year lines and all that kind of stuff. So it is a good time to start digging into some of those things.
It definitely is. I'm going through one of the things that I do. I'm going through each and every team. And for bowl purposes, I throw out the bowl games. I'm only handicapping for next year. I'm handicapping the regular season games. Bowl games, because of the motivation and everything going on, half the time the coach is gone and all that, I've always just thrown those away and just use the 12 games they have in the regular season. And, you know, I go through what their final record was. I go through what the average line in those games were. I also go through and check out the total turnovers and sacks and all those other things. And I also have incorporated game grades. Phil Steele does an excellent job with his game grades, and he's one of the few out there that make them public. I think it costs $40 a year for whatever package that is, but it's a definite buy because when you have so many turnovers in a game and you just can't go off of what the final score is. You've got to break the game down, and if it wasn't didn't have any turnovers, what the game would be and that kind of thing. He does a very good job with his game grades on that. So I not only have whatever a team's final record was, I could go back and see basically how they did against the spread, what their record should have been, points for, points against, and then I break down the game grades. It gives you a better option. So a team might have been 6-6, but if you go back and take a look at what they've done, maybe they were a team that should have only won 4 games. So when they come out with the opening season wins for the following year, you're already ahead of the pack because most people will go off of, well, they were 6-6 last year. They're bringing back the same amount of people as they had last year. We weren't expecting them to win 6. And that's obviously how the sports books make their money, is by helping you take the shortcut that way. So the more ways I can get that solid number coming into the season, the better chances I'm going to win those season wins.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I mean, you look at things like turnover margin. You look at, you know, point differential, both in conference and overall. You want to make sure that you're properly evaluating those non-conference games, especially against FCS teams or things of that sort. So that's important. And you know, I mean, look, our listener counts show this, that, you know, when football's over, our listener counts do drop off. There's just not as much interest in basketball. You know, it's a tougher handicap, obviously, being a daily sport. You know, college football, they play once a week. NFL, they play once a week. So, you know, for those listeners that may drop off here, and I certainly hope that you don't, but for those that do, you know, I think it's a very important thing that Brian just talked about there, you know, in terms of while a lot of this stuff is fresh in your mind, go ahead and get some of that base research done, get a nice framework, because the last thing you want to do is be trying to play catch up, you know, once these numbers are popping and then, you know, you lose some equity and some line value.
Yeah, you definitely do. And I was down at the this South Point when a couple of your guys, Ralph and Ralph Michaels and Brad Powers, were putting in their season wins, betting the opening lines, and there was a few other guys that I respect that fly in and do that. And you know, I've talked about this in the past. I was the gold nugget for the games of the years and that kind of thing. And at the Westgate, the farther out you can make you are ready. The farther out you are ready, it's much better to be betting these things before the season starts, when you're only going up against literally a handful of people, because not too many people fly into Vegas and do these things. They don't want to put their money up that early in the season. But, you know, we've talked about these records that I've had betting these games, you know, much in advance. And Brad's the same way. Brad, I told Brad, this is how you take advantage of it. And he definitely had another exciting season, and he's had a great college season overall. But I would rather have a 65% chance of winning 3 months ahead of time than maybe a 52% chance of winning come game day when you're going up against millions of other bettors. It's just common sense. Now, not everybody has that kind of bankroll, but if you set up your bankroll where you've got, say, even 25% of what you would do during the regular season, put that towards betting the futures, betting season wins, betting the future bets. You'll have you chart. A lot of people never chart their games. Chart those games and see what kind of percentage that is. And sure, they're going to hold your money for a while. But if you can get 10% higher winning percentage by betting those than you would that day-to-day grind. The day-to-day grind, especially as we just talked about in basketball, that's what kills a lot of people, because you've got to stay up on it day to day. It's not like, you know, football where you're playing once a week. You've got time. You know, sometimes it takes me 2-3 days to get all my stats done at the end of the week for football, because I'm an old school guy and I like to do it by hand. But that's the difference between winners and losers, is getting that. And if you can come into the season and say, hey, I know 25% of my bankroll, I'm going to be able to increase that bankroll for the following year a certain percentage based on past history, it helps you as the season goes on. So when the season's over, you've got all those tickets you can cash, and that sets you up for the next season. So it's definitely something I do, and I didn't do it as much this year. I wasn't taking a part into the college season wins. I did a lot in the NFL, but it's something I need to do. It's just, you can't make a living at this without at least trying that and trying to get the best numbers you possibly can.
Well, and it makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, you're talking about season win totals over a 12 or a 13 game sample size, as opposed to the variance and volatility of one game on a given weekend. You know, I mean, there may be a team that, you know, you've got a touchdown overlay in your power ratings. They go -3 in turnover margin. That bet's dead in the water. You know, that bet's going to lose that weekend. But they may have lost that game. But from a season win total standpoint, there may be 2 or 3 games they win that they are an underdog in, or, you know, a couple of swing games that come through for you. So I think the win total market makes a ton of sense. I mean, you think about it just from an investment standpoint. You know, you've got a 13-game sample size or a 12-game sample size. You've got margin for error. You know, you've got something that can increase in equity as you go throughout the season. You play one standalone game on a weekend, that's it. It's very cut and dry. You win or you lose. That's it. It defines your bet. So I think the win total market makes a ton of sense. There are some people out there that will really only play futures and put a significant amount of money down on those things. You know, I think you know, Sports Cheetah, for example, when we had him on the program, you know, he would play 30, 35, sometimes 40 of the win totals. And, you know, if you go, you know, 25 and 15 on those, that's fantastic. You know, you go 25 and 15 over 40, you know, individual games, it's awesome. But are you going to be able to sustain that pace? Probably not. So, you know, it's one of those things where I think you really do have to look at those as investments and consider the equity in them.
Yeah, you definitely do. And I've been, for years, I played a lot of NBA and Major League Baseball, because my feeling has always been the more games you play, the truer your outcomes are going to be. For example, at the end of the baseball season, the teams that go to the playoffs, for the most part, those are the best teams because you played 162 games. In the NBA, you play the 82 games. That's a long season. What has kept me away from it in college football is because it's only 12 games. It's a small sample size when you take a look at the other teams in the other leagues. And that was one reason I didn't do the college football this year, is because it's only 12 games and it's not as much as, you know, the 162. And we have seen this. We've got teams in the bowl games that really are not deserving of bowl games because they just were not very good. And most of those are out in the first week or two. But still, those are, you know, with the 12-game sample size, and they've got so many teams going to the bowls, about everybody that has any type of season is going to go to the bowls. But it's tougher for a 12-game or a 16-game to get to the final result. But you've got to have a final result. For example, just because a team wins the Super Bowl this year does not make them the best team, because they only played, you know, 20 games or whatever by the time the season's over. So 20 is a lot shorter than 162, but you've got to set your limits somewhere, because obviously football, such a physical sport, you can only play once a week. But anytime you get a multiple game sample size compared to just one, I mean, Buffalo went into Minnesota and beat Minnesota this year as a 15-point underdog. Just a couple weeks ago, we had the Eagles win as a 14-point underdog against the Rams. So in the course of a single game, anything can happen. But in the course of the full season, those teams play, you're going to get the better team winning most of those games. And really, that's the true showing. Anything can happen in a given week, which is why, you know, betting individual day of the game, especially if you're betting day of the game, it makes it even tougher. You want to try to get those, we've talked about that, getting the bets in as early as possible where you know the line's going to go. Unfortunately, not enough people have the time to do that. And that makes it tougher for just the guy who bets with his neighborhood bookie, and he calls up the guy on Sunday morning and he goes, okay, give me a rundown of the NFL lines. The chances of him winning compared to somebody who has been betting all week long on those lines is a lot smaller. You know, a small sample size, maybe he'll outdo that person that week, maybe that month. But over the course of the season, the person who's been more prepared is going to win more money.
All right, let's hit on some of these bowl games here. I think it's a great discussion for the offseason and what people should budget their time on. And especially if you're not a basketball or a hockey handicapper, good time of the year to be looking at some of this college football stuff and really try to become an expert in that field. But we'll go to Thursday here. Let's talk about the Independence Bowl game, 235-236, Duke and Temple. Temple, a 3.5-point favorite here for this one down in Shreveport. Total dropping from 56.5 to 54.5. Brian, what do you think about this game?
Yeah, there's a few of these games, including today, where there's been a lot of people that I know are on a certain side, and if the line's not moving. Just a moment. For example, Duke. I got to get to my lines here. Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. This is an interesting game because, you know, I'm surprised to see money coming in on Temple when Duke has such a big coaching advantage with David Cutcliffe against interim Ed Foley.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that I know have already sent me, you know, their write-ups of some of these games, and they're liking the Duke side. My number says Temple in this game, and a major reason of that is the way Duke finished the season. Last two games, they get crushed at Clemson. Obviously, you could expect that. But the way they played against Wake Forest, losing that last game 59-7, it's tough for teams. They were, keep in mind, they were 9.5-point favorite in that game. It's tough for teams to stay at the same level all season long. It rarely happens. Duke started the year. You go back and look at the games at the start of the year. Hey, they beat Army by 20 points. They beat Northwestern by 14 points. They beat Baylor by 13 points. Those are three teams that all went to the bowls, and they all had pretty good seasons, better than what were expected, especially Army, who was just a tremendous moneymaker for their backers this year. But then they end the season, and they just don't play well going down the stretch. They had one good game where they went to go to Miami and win that game by 8 as a 9-point underdog. And, you know, other than that, they beat Carolina, North Carolina by what they should. But other than that, they were very disappointing ending the season. Whereas Temple's one of those teams that pretty much all season long were a team that you can make some money on. I have Temple as the better team in here. I think there's some value on Temple. And one of the things for Duke is their special teams are so bad. They were in the bottom 10 in college football and special teams. So that's one of the things I'm looking at. I haven't decided to be out today what I'm going to use in the bowl games. But I'm in agreement on the Temple move. It's a slight move from 3 to 3.5 for the most part. But I'm just not buying into the way that Duke finished the season. But, you know, you've got to take into preseason priors, and Duke was expected to be a very good team. So maybe those guys get together and say, you know what, now that the season's over, let's try to start for next year and try to put a foot forward and consider this bowl game part of next year as opposed to this year, and see if they can come out and play a good game. But my numbers say Temple, and that's the way I'm looking at this one.
Well, that's the hard part about these bowl games is that, you know, we do see some motivation angles. We do see some coaching advantages and things of that sort. But also, too, you know, we have a spot where one team is just a lot better than another team. And I wouldn't say that Temple's a lot better necessarily. Your numbers may be a little bit different from mine on this game. But, you know, again, I mean, Temple is a very good team. They were a very good team over the course of the season. Does that change with the interim head coach? Well, I'm not really sure. But like you said, you know, there's a lot of people on Duke in this game. The public consensus percentages say Duke. I would expect sharp bettors to be on Duke as well with, you know, as I mentioned, the big coaching advantage for the Blue Devils. And the line's either going the other way or not moving. So that's kind of a red flag right there, to be sure, and why it's so important. Even if you like a certain side of a game, even if your numbers say a certain side of a game, look at what's going on in the betting market, because I think it's very telling what's happening for this one.
Yeah, it's, for example, in today's that we're taking here on Thursday, on the first game on Wednesday with Bowling Green and Boston College, I had yet to meet anybody who's on Boise State in this game, and yet the line is slightly ticking down, but, you know, a lot of money on Boston College, but we will see. It's an interesting way to look at the games, and you just got to be prepared on looking at these games and try to see why the line is moving, and sometimes it moves just the opposite direction on what you think it is. So people who are betting big money are moving these lines, and you're not in the head of each and every person, but it's interesting to see how these go.
All right, let's go to the Pinstripe Bowl here. Very heavy Wisconsin money, a lot of public Wisconsin money in this one, down from 4 to 3. Alex Hornibrook not going to play in this game here. This is a game that we had a pretty interesting discussion about on Monday's show, and I imagine you and I will do the same here. I mean, I got to say, I don't understand the Wisconsin move here. I don't get it. Do you?
I do get Wisconsin, and I did a video last week or maybe the week before we discussed this game. And I believe I might have been on this video with Ralph Michaels, and we had a disagreement. I believe he liked Miami, and I liked Wisconsin here. And one of the things, and I might have talked about this last week when I was on the show, is you like to play these teams that have the rushing advantage, top 10 teams in rushing finish the season. Because when you get to the bowl game, that's a long layoff between these bowl games. And it's a much easier to keep your running game going all the way through as opposed to a timing offense that Miami would have from a passing standpoint. Wisconsin, regardless of who's the quarterback, this is a team who makes their bread and butter running the football. They've always had top offensive linemen going to the NFL each and every year. And I think that's a big advantage for Wisconsin in this game. The disadvantage for Wisconsin is they've got one of the bottom 10 special teams. And that's always a concern when you're playing a quality football team like Miami, especially, you know, we've seen that Miami defense with the chain that they have, and they're a very excitable defense. They really go all out on defense, and the special teams are very much the same way. So that is a concern, and that's a big advantage for Miami in this game, could be the special teams. But I like the teams that can run the football, and even with a little bit of money coming in on Wisconsin here, I have Wisconsin the favorite in this game, and they have not played a good year, and a lot of that had to do with the quarterback that's not there right now. He's not going to be playing in this game. So as opposed to a lot of teams just playing out the season, this is a situation in Wisconsin. I would consider this the first game of next season because of the quarterback change there, and see what they can do, because this has been a disappointing season basically for both of these squads. And keep in mind, Wisconsin was supposed to play in the Big Ten championship game. They were supposed to have that easy schedule going all the way through, and playing Ohio State was what was expected to be played. But neither one of these teams played well all season long, but I've got more faith in Wisconsin going forward.
Well, to play devil's advocate here, Miami 11th in yards per carry allowed, Wisconsin 70th in yards per carry allowed. And Miami's quarterback play has been a disaster all season long, but they do run the football relatively effectively. So I think this could be a game. I mean, I think the under is really the way to look in this game, because I don't think either quarterback is put into a compromising situation. But I'd have to go the other way, Brian. I'd have to take a look at Miami here, because I'd be concerned about Wisconsin's ability to run the football. I mean, I know that Wisconsin's a very physical team. It's a different brand of football than Miami sees in the ACC, but you know, Miami's got a pretty good run defense here. And so, you know, I think both of these teams really do struggle to move the football, though. And of course, when you get to that point, you know, taking a plus four or plus three and a half in what should be a low scoring game, we all know that there's value in that too.
Well, I'm just taking a look at Miami's schedule, and their wins have come against Toledo, a disappointing team. Savannah State, I don't really rate the FCS schools, but FIU, somewhat disappointing. North Carolina, very disappointing. Florida State, extremely disappointing. Virginia Tech, disappointing. And then they finished the year with Pittsburgh, who I believe had to play the following week for the conference championship. So, from my mind, Miami really hasn't beaten anybody that was very good this year. I think Wisconsin will be the best team that they play, that they have beaten. So, that we will see. And it's an interesting standpoint from both parties. I understand what you're saying. I definitely could see some backing for Miami, but I just think this is a Wisconsin team that I have graded out better than Miami.
Well, and Miami last year, of course, started 10-0, played three good teams at the end of the year, lost to all of them, including Wisconsin. So, you know, I certainly get that point too, that Miami, you know, when they've stepped up in class or even really played comparable talent levels, they have not shown well. So that's certainly factoring into this handicap here as well. How about game 239-240, Vanderbilt-Baylor? Vanderbilt, 4-point favorite for the Texas Bowl. This is a game I think is more intriguing than what people would expect, but also a game where I understand why people don't really seem to have very strong opinions.
Yeah, and I'm one of those that doesn't have a strong opinion. I made this line 4.0, and that's exactly what we're seeing out there right now. In fact, yeah, depending on where you're looking at, you could get a 3.5 with extra juice. Basically, it's 4 across the board. Interesting that you've got the offensive conference in the Big 12. It'll be similar to – actually, be similar to the Oklahoma-Alabama game. Maybe we can gain something from this. Obviously, these are lesser teams than those two, but they are from the same conference. You got a Baylor team this year that really coming off of that terrible 1-11 season last year to be able to get back to bowling. I thought Baylor would actually be a little bit better than what they have. But this is a Baylor team at times this year has looked good. Vanderbilt has been pretty good all season long, actually. And, you know, it's been a team that's given some really good teams a tough game. Notre Dame 22-17. So Vanderbilt was right there against Notre Dame earlier in the season. Keep in mind, the Commodores are -3 turnover disadvantage in that game. And, you know, they play Florida within 10 points, Kentucky within 7, back when everybody thought Kentucky was a legitimate team. Missouri, they only lose by 5. So this is a team in Vanderbilt who actually had a pretty good season. And I would trust, for the most part, the SEC teams, because when you go to get to the bowls, if there's two conferences I'm going to focus on, it's to be playing on the SEC and to be playing against the MAC. And it's worked out very well. The only game I think the MAC covered was the one that we had our big play on Ohio in. So Those are the two things that are pretty much a guarantee when you're going into the bowl season, is taking a look at how these conferences as a whole play. And so it's tough for me to go against any team of the SEC, and obviously my numbers are exactly what the line is here. So I think I'm going to watch this and try to learn something for future games in the bowl season.
All right, well, then what about the Music City Bowl on Friday? Game 241-242, is that a position where maybe you're looking to go against the SEC, as we're seeing the market taking Purdue here so far?
My number on this game does favor Purdue a little bit in this one, but as I pointed out, it's tougher to go against the teams that you don't enjoy to win. This Auburn team, it's rare that we see a team that has as much talent as this Tigers team does year in, year out. It somehow seems to be disappointing. Gus Malzahn was the sixth star this year, and he's had a reputation of being a terrific offensive mind. But other than the game where they played Liberty, they scored 53 points, this Auburn Tigers offense has been extremely disappointing this year. Scoring 10 points against Georgia, 9 against Mississippi State. Those are the two best defenses that they played. LSU, they did score 21 there. Washington scored 21 in that opener. So when they played a good defense, they have struggled mightily. I don't know if Purdue's had that same range, but I like what's going on at Purdue. I like the way Purdue played this year. My numbers do have Purdue as the side I would look at this game, but you got to keep in mind that the Auburn special teams were one of the top 10 in the country this year. They were very good on special teams. But even though the Tigers, and I went back and I talked about that, getting the preseason rankings, Auburn was a highly rated team coming into the season. Obviously, Purdue wasn't. So when you include, because as I said before, the 12 games is really a small sample size. So you've got to go back and use a little bit of what you've done in the preseason preparations. And when you include that, I could see where the line would be three and a half at some places. But on the field this year, Auburn has just not played well. It wouldn't amaze me if Auburn comes out here and just plays their best game of the year, because they are playing a mid-range team from the Big Ten. But Purdue has had the better schedule all season long. Purdue has performed better than what people expected. I think the fan base in Purdue is more excited about what's been going on than with Auburn right now. Auburn's got to be stuck wondering what the hell happened to all this. They were a 10-win team last year, even in a disappointing season. So Gus Malzahn really hasn't done as well after that first season of 12-2. I haven't heard of anything about making coaching changes, but he's got to get this thing back together. They've got the talent. It's a good recruiting team. We'll have to see what happens. But this is maybe a game I sit out just because I know Auburn, if they come to play their A game, they should win this by double digits. But once again, they haven't done that all season long.
All right, let's talk NFL Week 17 for a few minutes here. We've got four games with double-digit lines. We've got the Giants favored by 6 over Dallas, which you're not normally going to see. Minnesota favored by 5 over Chicago, which you're not normally going to see. Obviously here, Week 17, very, very tough to figure out in some respects. Some games matter, some games don't. Playoff scenarios, all sorts of different things. What's your approach to Week 17, Brian? Do you feel like you can find a lot of value, or do you take it easy?
I do take it easy. One thing I do, and I did it last week, and except for the damn Jets losing that game in overtime and costing me a win, I would have swept the board. But I like to go against the teams that need to win. It's proven out over the years that if a team is in a must-win situation, you just bet against them. You're going to get the best of the line. The other team is a professional football player. They're playing for their contracts for next year. They want everything on tape. It's a different ball game. And just because a team needs to win doesn't mean they're a good team. And we've got a few of those going this week. You mentioned the Dallas Giants game. I was with a guy as we were watching the games on Sunday, and he asked me what I would make it. And I said I would make the Giants. And to see it as 6 was a little bit higher than what I expected, but I think Dallas may be resting some of their players in this game, and it's not a game that they obviously need. So, but yeah, you see a lot of these when you come down here. They just released the Carolina-New Orleans line. They're 7.5. There's been times in the past where New Orleans has rested all their players the final week when they've had, they have already clinched. It's tough line at 7.5, but you got a Carolina team that, what's Carolina got to play for? Last week, which should have been the game where Carolina come back after that Monday night and played a quality game. They didn't. They didn't play well at all last week. So you're getting a team that doesn't want to play against a team that's going to be playing their backups. It's just so much this following week, this final week of the season in which people expect the teams that need to win to win. And, you know, sure, Pittsburgh against Cincinnati, the line's 14. I believe it was 17 earlier. It's 14, 14 and a half now. Sure, Pittsburgh's the better team playing at home. I don't see how Cincinnati has much thought in this game, but I thought saw the same thing last week against Cleveland. Cleveland, 10-point favorite. I bet Cincinnati just on principle last week and probably was fortunate to get that cover. But when you put a team like Cleveland in a situation where they're never a favorite of that magnitude, they don't know how to play with the lead. And they took the air out of the ball, and it just didn't work very well for Cleveland. And Cincinnati backers got that spread cover. You find that a lot come this part of the season. We've got Chicago, Minnesota here. Minnesota needs to get the victory to go to the playoffs. Chicago and Minnesota are a huge rivalry. If Minnesota wins, I believe they will play Chicago again next week. If it's off the top of my head, I think that's how it goes. So, really, what do you know going into this game? Is Chicago want to keep Minnesota out of the playoffs and play their full arsenal? We'll have to see. It's just too much of a guessing game. And now where you've got basketball and hockey full time, it's why put your money up there for a game that you're not sure of the motivation?
Well, then last thing I'll ask you here, you know, we got a couple of teaser candidates this week. You've got Baltimore against Cleveland. Baltimore needs to win the game. Cleveland's playing very, very well, but, you know, still a 6-point dog here going out to take on Baltimore. Then the Chargers, who are a 6.5-point favorite at Denver. Chargers need the win as well if they want to have a shot at winning the division. It doesn't look like it's going to happen because Oakland plays Kansas City. But, you know, still, I mean, the Chargers have some incentive here. Or is this a week that you just stay away from teaser plays too?
Well, even in teasers, you've got a couple spots. The ones you mentioned, the road favorite part of the teaser is a losing proposition overall. The Baltimore part of the teaser, I can understand, but you're already laying less than 7, so, and you're currently a 6, so you're really not helping yourself too much on the getting the 3 and the 4 in the key number standpoint. I would rather play Baltimore on the money line, maybe, you know, if you, instead of the teaser in the San Diego or the Chargers part 2, just parlay the money lines, that kind of thing. Denver is interesting because they did play terribly on Monday Night Football, but I think that was more of a situation where Oakland was playing for the fans. And I had a play on Oakland in that game. I bet Oakland in that game. And you see a lot of that. You've got to know when players are coming out. For example, you know, the game will be played by the time this goes out, but this Georgia Tech playing on Wednesday, legendary coach, last game. I see why Georgia Tech has taken all this money. You've got to be able to pick these spots out. Denver, I think it's pretty good chance, if it hasn't been announced yet, that they're losing their head coach. So really, what do they have to play for here? But I don't like to get too involved unless the lines just get totally out of whack and you see a team that really needs to win and the line just get jacked up. We'll have to see as the week goes on, but it's just too much of a guessing game. You know, at this point, I think the Jacksonville catching the points against Houston is not a bad bet. Jacksonville's played a little bit better as of late. Houston, you know, line 7, a little over 7 at this point. Low scoring game with a total of 44.5. That would be the type of team that I would either look to tease Houston down below or play Jacksonville plus the points. So that's probably going to get more of my attention than some of these other games.
Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. What's going on over there right now, Brian?
Everybody's off for Christmas. Everybody's taking a Christmas break. A lot of people traveling around the country with their families and all. And I just like it because it gives me more time to set up and work for the following season. And I'm excited about taking the week off. It's a nice break for Christmas. And I'm looking forward to a great new year and getting the ball rolling on this upcoming baseball season. Start working on baseball this week.
Well, make sure you check out Brian's stuff over at Wager Talk. Also, B. Leonard Sports on Twitter. Brian, appreciate the time as always, sir. Thank you so much, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks. Best of luck to everyone.
There you go. There's Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at WagerTalk.com. We do have Wes Reynolds on the line for us to join us here for our Wednesday wagering segment. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. Good morning. How are you?
Doing well, buddy. How you doing? How'd you enjoy that? How'd you enjoy working on Christmas?
Oh, it was interesting. I mean, it wasn't bad. I mean, that's just kind of part of the thing in this industry, or part of the thing in Las Vegas in general. I mean, things don't close. It's not conventional. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that are working on Christmas. And, I mean, when you haven't really done it very often, you get an appreciation for the people that work on Christmas, whether it's in hospitality or whether it's in working in your local convenience stores or working in restaurants, you know, because it's not always easy, but once you do it, you realize there's other people doing it too. So,
yeah, it's definitely a different dynamic out there. And again, your first year out there. So hopefully everything went well for you with the Christmas holiday. But I want to touch on week 17 here in the NFL. I'm sure you heard the tail end of that segment there with Brian. What are your thoughts on this week in the NFL? I mean, do you feel like you've got some good value? Do you look to pick off some things, or do you take it real easy and tread lightly?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there you got to pick your spots. I mean, there are certain, you know, elements. And I mean, and the fact that in the NFL this week, you've only got two teams in the playoffs that can really rest guys and not have it affect them in terms of seeding, which would be Dallas and also New Orleans. So everybody else kind of has to play. I mean, because their seeding's not determined or division has not been determined and whatnot. So, I mean, especially in the AFC where there's no seeds that are really settled. So, you know, you're getting a lot more of these teams that are going to be playing. And then you have obviously several games on the board where you have two teams matching up that are not going to make the playoffs. So, I mean, you know, those are a little bit tricky of spots, but I mean, we saw last week with so many road teams covering that, you know, a lot of these guys necessarily aren't phoning or mailing in an effort. I mean, that they're still playing. I mean, you saw Jacksonville with nothing to play for go in and beat Miami last week. And, you know, that's a perfect example. So, you know, just because some teams are out of the playoffs doesn't mean they're necessarily going to quit.
Well, and I think it's one of those things in the NFL too. I mean, obviously we know that tanking happens a ton in the NBA. I think to a lesser extent, it happens a little bit in the NHL, but the NBA definitely notorious for it. It's easier to tank and sort of not want to show up when you're playing three or four games a week. When you're playing one game a week, yeah, it's a little bit different. So I don't really think the tanking happens in the NFL as much as, you know, some people want to pretend it does. I mean, I think it's just one of those things where, you know, guys are playing for contracts. And even this week, you know, you've got a team like Dallas who's going to play virtually nobody, and I wouldn't play anybody on either side of the ball. You still have backups that want to make an impression, want to get playing time or get a contract somewhere else. You know, how many times – think about the Saints, for example, with A.J. Klein. You know, he's playing basically behind Luke Kuechly, gets chances because of all Kuechly's injuries. All of a sudden, he gets a huge contract from New Orleans in free agency. You know, there are backup players that are going to do that here this offseason. They're going to show up this week, and so are the guys around them. I think this is a week where you don't want to take anything for granted.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, I just don't see. I mean, we're probably going to see a blowout in some game, and we don't know which one it'll be. But I mean, I don't think guys are necessarily just gonna want to go mail it in. And I mean, that's hard to do in something like the NFL anyway, just from an individual player standpoint, not only with contracts and playing for your job, either it's your current team or perhaps for another team. But I mean, you can't really go out there and necessarily half-ass it because, you know, this is still, even with the rules in terms of, you know, trying to legislate the physicality of the game, you know, if you're not physical out there and you're going half speed and half-ass, that's how you get hurt. And, you know, so it's really hard to say, you know, okay, well, this team is not going to the playoffs, so, you know, they're just not going to care.
I think something that's really interesting this week, I want to get your thoughts on this. The Jets are probably going to fire Todd Bowles. I mean, I think that at this point, they probably need to clean house with a lot of the executives that are there, and then also the coaching staff, and sort of build around Sam Darnold. You know, Green Bay, interim head coach Joe Philbin, he's not getting that job. You know, Tampa Bay, Dirk Cotter and his staff, they're all gone. Cincinnati, I think it's probably past time to move on from Marvin Lewis. We've had, you know, we've seen some rumors that Arizona may move on from Steve Wilks after just 1 year. A lot of head coaching jobs in limbo. Denver's going to fire Vance Joseph. Either in limbo or decided to the point where the players really hit the wall here. So what do you think about those teams? Is it just you got to evaluate each one individually, or do you feel like there's kind of a blanket statement we can throw over all of them?
Well, I think if you look, I mean, I don't think any of those teams you mentioned where it's going to be, you know, players, necessarily playing for those coaches' jobs or that coach to stay. I mean, if they're going to play, they're going to play for themselves individually and play for pride and perhaps play for their teammates. But, I mean, you know, a couple of the ones you mentioned, like I don't see any way Denver brings Vance Joseph back. But, you know, that's still a team that you can't just dismiss with, I mean, the Chargers have obviously so much more to play for and they're so much better on the road. 7-1 straight up, 6-2, I think they're 7-1 actually ATS on the road. Much better on the road than they are that kind of makeshift home stadium they've been playing in. But, you know, it's still Denver, even being at 6-9, that's still not an easy place to win on the road with the altitude and whatnot. And the fact that the line is below 7, you know, with all these, with everything to play for the Chargers, it's like, you know, do you really want to necessarily jump in on the Chargers and think that that's just easy money? And, you know, books aren't into giving out easy money in week 17, I can tell you that. So, you know, you can't just take necessarily everything at face value. Atlanta, Tampa Bay is obviously a coin flip. Both of them, Atlanta got a road win last week in Carolina, but against a second and third team quarterback. Tampa Bay actually did put an effort out in Dallas, ended up getting a backdoor cover, depending on your number. But, you know, they didn't go out there and just necessarily go through the motions. And I wouldn't anticipate it here in week 17 either.
It's hard because I think, you know, I think the over is the right play in Atlanta and Tampa Bay. And we're seeing that total go from 49.5 to 52 because when there's nothing to play for, the playbook gets loosened up a little bit. The offenses look to put up numbers, you know? So I think like we saw in that Green Bay Jets game last week where that thing absolutely flew over the total. I think that's the right play in a lot of these games of teams that, you know, aren't really going anywhere, but there are a lot of fringy playoff scenarios in a lot of these different games here. And I think one thing too about this week is that, you know, you look at the Philadelphia and Washington game, for example, despite Philadelphia's best effort team to not, you know, look at the scoreboard and try to figure out, you know, what other contenders are doing for that wild card spot, someone's going to tell them. You know, that information is going to come out, you know, what Minnesota is doing in their game against the Bears. So, you know, for Philadelphia here, you may really like them. You may think, okay, Super Bowl champs, you know, Nick Foles, they're going to figure this thing out. They're going to win this game running away. But if they get wind that Minnesota is, you know, beating up on Chicago, all of a sudden, you know, they may kind of change their personality in that game. So that's something about, you know, how all these games match up from a starting time standpoint where live betting could be a very, very profitable thing on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and I like that they try to, you know, put these games kind of at the same time, you know, to where they're not, you know, I like the fact that they're putting Oakland, Kansas City, and the Chargers, Denver, both in that 125 window. You know, so it's not like, okay, City wins easily in the first game, and now the Chargers know that they can't do anything, so they're just going to, sit guys out if they're in the late afternoon game. So I actually like what they did with the scheduling dynamic here. And, you know, I think, you know, that makes for better competition. Obviously, the league wants these games to matter. That's why all of them are interdivision games. You know, so I mean, they want a good product in week 17 and not, you know, necessarily, you know, a ton of meaningless games. I mean, I think you have maybe at least four or five or close to that where both teams are really essentially not going to the playoffs, but, you know, they want competitive balance. So, I mean, I can certainly understand why they do that.
Well, and there's one spot I think is particularly interesting. It's Jacksonville and Houston. Houston down from 9 into the 7.5 range here. You know, I understand that coaches, they'll probably say that they never look at betting spreads or anything like that. And you don't necessarily have to look at the betting spread if you're Houston, you know, to see what's going on here for New England this week. But if I'm Bill O'Brien, you know, I kind of look at this spot and say, you know what? I'm not going to play Deshaun Watson. I'm not going to play Nook Hopkins. I'm not going to play, you know, J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney, because what are the actual chances that New England loses to the Jets? Very, very slim. So I think, you know, I'd be somebody who would go out there and grab Jacksonville plus 7.5 as just a numbers grab, expecting Houston to make some, you know, decisions that are going to affect this line later in the week. Those are things I think that are worthwhile and probably plus EV in the long run.
Yeah, and I mean, and I think you look at Jacksonville, I mean, you know, if they're playing for pride, I mean, they got essentially dominated by Houston. And that's kind of, I think, what turned Houston's season around, even though they were 3-3, and we talked about it in, you know, previous segments, that they could have barely easily been 0-6, and it wasn't until they went to Jacksonville and won, I think it was 20-7, but pretty much dominated them, that, you know, it was like, okay, maybe Houston has something here, and then that, I think, spurred them on to bigger and better things, you know, but I do think Jacksonville, I mean, they look at, you know, okay, we've been arguably the most disappointing team in the league, some would say the Steelers, but being in the AFC Championship game and sitting at a 5-10 record, you know, sometimes teams do want to spend their season out on a high note and at least have a little bit of optimism or a little bit of good feeling when there haven't been as much good feelings throughout the season, at least go into the off season with that. And, you know, when Blake Bortles lost that job, people could say what they want about him. But I mean, you know, when he kind of came into the game, even though he didn't have a lot of series and didn't put up a lot of big numbers, I think it kind of spurred them last week in Miami. And you know, maybe, you know, the fact that the guy's been the starter for a while, I don't think he's not disliked by his teammates. I mean, you know, so I think that, you know, that might have spurred them on a little bit. Little things like that, I think, can really spur a team, you know, little motivational things that maybe you don't see. So, I mean, I agree with this line move on Jacksonville, and that's a play I liked early in the week.
Let me correct myself here, because for Houston, you know, they would be a wild card team if they lose that game to Jacksonville. So I guess they do have more to play for than I originally thought, and why all these playoff scenarios are very important. If they lose that game, the winner of the Indy-Tennessee game wins the AFC South. So my apologies
right
there for that. But you know, there are these spots that do come up. There aren't as many of them here this year. But I do still think from a live betting standpoint, you know, there are some of those that are in play. Maybe not necessarily the Jacksonville-Houston game. So I do apologize for misspeaking there. But, you know, even you'll get a game like Miami and Buffalo, for example. You know, I think everybody's going to assume Miami goes up there with no desire to play. You know, it's cold and dreary and gray in Buffalo at this time of the year. Game means nothing for them. You would think it'd be a pretty one-sided line movement there, but yet we're only up to 3.5. And I think that kind of speaks to this element of, you know, they're all professional football players, that Miami appears to have no reason whatsoever to want to go up there and play. And this line opened 3, it's 3.5, and it's not, you know, a runaway number. So still, don't take anything for granted this week is again, what the primary point is of this discussion.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I would look at that particular game and look at Buffalo as a side thinking, you know, they did play at Miami just a couple weeks ago and outgained them 415 to 175 and still managed to lose the game in Miami. So, I mean, you know, you could certainly see maybe there could be a little bit of motivation there. And plus they've had kind of a tough season, and, you know, this is a chance, but they've continued to play hard every week. I mean, they knew that they were going to be bad. And, you know, they started out bad from the get-go and, you know, weren't able to recover but play hard every week. How does Miami get over the fact that they haven't been in the playoffs? And I think I read it was 15 of the last 17 years or something like that. And this is their, I believe it was their ninth season in a row where they're either 500 or worse. So, you know, does that kind of fester with the team? So I mean, that was a reason for me leaning with Bills and the fact that they're a solid 3.5 instead of being 3, you know, that, you know, maybe that's the odds maker telling you that he/she leans with Buffalo a little bit here. But I mean, those are really tough calls. And I think, you know, this obviously isn't a week where you want to, you know, even if you're doing it anyway, where you really want to, like, bet the board in the NFL.
All right, I want to transition over to the NBA for the last few minutes of the segment here, because a lot of people say that in the NBA, the season begins on Christmas. You know, you've got 5 games, generally most of them featuring premier teams, and it's sort of that wake-up call into the season. At least that's kind of the theory that some people work with here in basketball. What do you think? I mean, are you going to come out of the break, you know, not really out of the break, but out of the holiday, you know, ready to play those top contenders, thinking that, you know, all of a sudden they flip the switch?
You know, perhaps. And I mean, and I think you also got to look at the teams that had Tations that, you know, are around 500 or maybe plus or minus 2 games over 500, you know, somebody like New Orleans or somebody like Utah or, you know, even Houston, there's only 3 games over 500, you know, of, you know, and really kind of figuring out over the next week which way these teams are going to go. Because you've had some teams that I think have greatly surpassed expectations, like Sacramento. I mean, you know, you wouldn't have thought they'd be 18 and 15, you know, at Christmas. But they are, because, you know, and we've had this discussion before where it's like, okay, it usually takes 25 or so games to kind of really see where you are. But some team will start out real hot, and then all of a sudden they'll come back to earth, or a team will start out 2-8, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, they're better than that, and then they kind of, you know, get back to normalcy. But, you know, I think we know who, you know, the few really bad teams are in the NBA. I think we know that Chicago's bad. I think we know that the Knicks are bad and that Phoenix is bad. That doesn't mean they might not have spots. Most of the teams in the NBA right now are kind of, you know, either middling teams or good teams. There's very few what I would consider really bad teams right now. So, you know, things I think are gonna kind of keep holding the form at least, you know, from what I see.
Well, and of course now, too, we start to get into the point where you get a lot of trade rumors, you get a lot of discussion of transactions, things of that sort. So, you know, some of these teams that aren't really going anywhere, you take a team like Washington, for example, they probably need a shakeup, and maybe that includes trading John Wall away. You know, so that's also a consideration now at this point, too. The holidays are gone. We're 2 months away from the All-Star break or so, I think. The trade buzz really starts up now, and yeah, that's something that can affect some of these teams too.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, I think you're going to see, you know, a couple of teams maybe if they're close, thinking maybe they can try to make a move to kind of cement themselves as a title contender. Because, I mean, there's really only, obviously, in the NBA, a few legitimate contenders. I mean, in the East, clearly Toronto, you know, Philadelphia, I think, and certainly, Milwaukee, Indiana. I mean, those are really, to me, the five teams in the East. In the West, you have Golden State. You have, maybe the Lakers think that they're there. I don't, even though they were impressive last night, I don't know if they're there in terms of title contention. I mean, they could be, but, I mean, you're seeing some of these teams, Denver or, Houston, I think, thinks that they're right there, even though their record doesn't indicate it. But, I mean, you know, somebody's probably going to try to make a big move to, you know, really say, okay, we're going to go for it. And then you have some teams that have good records that I think have, you know, maybe they're going to say, let's see how this plays out with our young core, like a Sacramento or like, you know, maybe the Clippers or somebody like that, where it's like, okay, we're just going to stay the course and see how we end up. We don't think we're necessarily a contender. We think we're playoff teams, but, you know, maybe they don't make too many drastic moves and just kind of look at what they have. Also include Oklahoma City, I guess, in that Western contention as well. But, you know, some of these teams, I think, in the middle or maybe toward the back end, 5-8, I think are kind of maybe going to stay the course, especially if they're a young team, and just, you know, see where it ends up.
Last thing I want to ask you about here, Wes, you know, these kind of become the dog days of winter now. You know, you're about 30 games into the season, so you're either in contention or you're not, or, you know, you're kind of seeing what flaws you have as a team. Obviously, scheduling spots are a big deal at this time of the year. You know, bad weather can impact travel, stuff like that. So do you find that, you know, maybe you're a little bit more active in the NBA market over the next, 4 to 6 weeks?
You know, maybe. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, for me personally this year, I'm, you know, a little bit up. I'm not, you know, doing great in the NBA. But, I mean, you know, NBA has kind of been back and forth. It's the toughest sport for me personally to handicap. Now, some people listen to this as like it's easy because they win. But, I mean, it is a little bit tough for me because not only, you know, would you have teams that rest guys different nights and seeing where they are, and especially with these being the dog days of winter. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to get more active or kind of, you know, keep kind of the same with what I'm doing. Clearly, I think after the All-Star break, as you get into the spring, you know, that's when I think you have to be a little more careful and maybe wait for the playoffs, you know, as you get into like March and you know, early, mid, late March. That's when you have some of these teams that are totally out of it. Maybe they're, I don't know whether they're tanking or whether they're trying new lineups or trying to get certain guys more minutes to get a look and see what they have in terms of an individual player standpoint. But, you know, I don't think I'm going to play any more or maybe any less over this next month or two.
Always good to get the insights of Wes Reynolds here on Bang the Book Radio. You can follow him on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Wes, appreciate the time, sir. Thank you so much for joining me, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, Adam. Thanks a lot. Happy New Year, everyone.
Good stuff there with Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. Also a good segment with Brian Leonard earlier here on today's show. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with professional handicapper Brad Powers from bradpowersports.com. College football and the NFL with him. And then Tony George, professional handicapper over at Doc Sports. Then Friday, Westgate Super Contest selection segment for week 17, the last one here for us. And then Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.